The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010. Fantasy Focus.
Hey guys, Daniel again, and just like we did for part one, these are the full interviews we had from the 2019 NFL Combine. In this podcast, you're going to get Chargers GM Tom Telesco, Lions GM Bob Quinn, Redskins head coach Jay Gruden, Raiders offensive coordinator Greg Olson, and last but not least, Rams GM Les Snead. Hope you guys enjoy.
Great to be joined by Chargers general manager Tom Telesco. And Tom, this is a familiar spot for you, not only because you come to the Combine every year, but you lived in Indy for a long time.
Yeah, 15 years we spent here. So, but even when we lived here, we still stayed in a hotel downtown for the Combine.
Is that right?
Yeah, the days are so long, the early mornings with the weigh-ins, the interviews go till 11 o'clock at night. So we would stay downtown. But no, I spent 15 years here. This is our kids were born here, so technically they're Hoosiers, which is kind of strange to me. But spent a lot of time here. Loved living here. It was a great place to be.
I wonder, did you guys stay in a hotel when you guys played the Rams this past season, also in L.A.?
Well, yeah, it was an away game, so you have to.
So we bust up to
downtown L.A., stayed there, and played the game.
How about that? So you have built one of the more balanced rosters in the NFL, and obviously your background working for the Colts has always been a draft and develop team. As you look at this week, I don't know if there's one thing, but like, what are some of the highlights? What are the specific things that you guys focus on as a staff here in Indy during the week?
Well, the one thing we tell our staff to make sure is that whatever goes on here, especially on the field with the measurables, let's not forget what happened in the fall.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing is how they played football in the fall with the helmet, shoulder pads on. Now, things that we come here are still important to come here. The measurables are important to us. It's how we do our studies. It's how we do our work and that sort of thing. But really, the most important thing for us is really the medical.
Yeah.
We have to have that to help us assign risk to players for durability reasons. That's a big part of it. So that all gets done here, and that's part that none of us even see. The doctors take care of that. The psychological testing is very important to us to get that done. And then the interview process, even though it's only 15 minutes, at least it kind of opens the door a little bit to these players.
Sure.
Get a little bit of feel for their personality, try and get a feel for their football intelligence. We'll take it farther from here, and for some of these players we've already talked to, but those are probably the three biggest things, and then the on-field work would be, you know, secondary to that.
Crazy to think that the on-field work is what we all care about as fans, and that the on-field work may not be necessarily the most important thing. But you mentioned medical, and Mike Williams a couple of years ago was one of the big storylines, medically speaking. Obviously had some injuries at Clemson, and then early on in his career, 10 touchdowns last year. What now is the trajectory for Mike coming into year three? Firmly entrenched as a guy opposite of Keenan, where do you sort of see him and his progress to this point?
Well, I think we saw last year what he can do, and we really saw it from the first day of training camp.
Yeah.
You know, how talented he is, and you know, the sky's the limit with Mike. I mean, he had a great year for us this year. We do have a lot of other players that get the football as well. We got Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler, and obviously the tight end group. So there aren't a ton of footballs to go around, but Mike's a playmaker. He showed that. And what he showed too, he's not just a 50-50 jump ball guy. I mean, he runs very good routes. He's quick. He's fast. And I made some big plays for us this year.
I've heard a lot of coaches and GMs here at the Combine talking about there are very few guys in the league that can be a back by themselves for a team. Not too many. You know, Zeke Elliott is one of the names that I've heard. Last year when Melvin was healthy, kind of felt like there were some stretches there where he was the guy unto himself. Obviously, it's not your job to decide who gets the carries during the course of the game, but is he one of those players that if you were evaluating just backs across the league, kind of fits that mold, is capable of handling what would amount to 300-plus touches a year?
Well, there were more than just stretches with him. I mean, he played well. He really did.
Yeah.
He's a three-down back. He can run the ball. He can catch out of the backfield. He runs very good routes, and he can pass protect. So he can play all three downs. But I do think it's a position that you do have to rotate players in, and Austin Eckler came in and did a great job for us, and that was a great 1-2 punch for us. Two different styles of backs, but two very highly productive players. They played really well together. But the thing with Melvin is, you know, he can play all three downs and play them all equally well.
We saw for a brief moment at the end of the season, Hunter Henry obviously on the field, which was great to see him. I mean, ridiculous comeback in whatever it was, 8 or 9 months. Where now do you guys envision Hunter fitting into this offense going forward? Is sort of the tight end spot his to have?
Yeah, we felt that going into last year and then until he got hurt. But, no, he has everything you look for in that position because, again, that's just not a position that's a run and catch and put up yards position. You have to be able to block as well.
Yep.
And he can do that dual role for us. He can block. He can catch. He's a really good football player. We missed him last year. Having him back is huge, and he's a big part of our offense.
In this age where quarterbacks are seemingly playing later and sturdier than ever into their mid to late 30s, what about Phillip? sort of impresses you guys year to year that maybe defies what 37 years old tells you it should be?
You're right, though. We've seen that the age for quarterbacks has really started to stretch a little bit farther out, which is obviously for us very good to see.
Sure.
Now his preparation skills are the same now as they were when he was a younger player. His enthusiasm is the same, maybe even more now. The work he puts into it, and he had a career year last year. Yeah. So it's great, you know, and what we have to make sure we have is a strong team around him. I don't think any quarterbacks have to stay back there and carry the whole team on their own. And we're not asking them to do that. Have enough weapons on offense, have an offensive line, and have a defense and get the ball back for us. So, he had a tremendous year for us last year. And like I said, at this point of his career, to still playing at that level, you know, we're very, very lucky.
Does it maybe change your philosophy a little bit with roster construction? Hey, you know, not that you guys are always discussing windows, but, you know, Phillip, if he could play for, it seems reasonable to play a handful of more years, or let's say 3 to 5 more years, that might change the way that you're loading up in other positions around the roster.
Not necessarily. No, it's not how we look at it. I don't really look at windows. Our goal is to win every year.
Right.
Doesn't matter who the quarterback is. But we know Phil is playing at a very high level. And we're doing the best we can to put the best team around him. But no, I don't look at it as windows here or there. I mean, no matter who that quarterback is, we're here to win.
I'm just hopeful that he plays long enough that you can draft one of his children to play like wide receiver for the Chargers, something like that one day. I don't know if any of them are football
what
players.
What about quarterback?
Quarterback, well, backup quarterback. That's right. The succession plan just goes from Rivers to Rivers.
That's right.
Tom Telesco, thanks a lot for your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
He's Field Yates.
Special guest here on the podcast, Bob Quinn, general manager of the Detroit Lions, sitting just like 36 inches away from Daniel Dobbs. So I've built a barrier to protect you. No, we love to see the Lions fans.
Yeah,
like this.
The more the merrier.
That's right. You've been coming here for I don't even know how many years.
It's 20 years now.
This is 20 years.
This is actually 20. I know my first year was 2000.
So how about that? 20 years in Indianapolis, the NFL Combine. You are a scouting guy through and through. As you use this week or look at this week, what's the most important thing that you can say universally applies each year that you show up in Indianapolis? Or is there anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple things that happen. I think number one, it's to get all the players in one place and really the medical. I know it's boring for the fans to hear,
sure.
But to get the medical information on 350 college prospects for us at one spot is enormous, because it's really impossible for our medical staff to do that without the combine, you know, being in one spot. So that, and then just really get first, you know, up close and personal, you know, interviews with the players. You know, we do some of the Senior Bowl and some of the East West and the All-Star game, but for myself and, you know, Coach Patricia and his staff to kind of get involved with it, it's really great. It's a great scene, here. And I think, you know, Jeff Foster does an unbelievable job with kind of organizing this whole thing, because there's a lot that goes on, trying to organize this big event.
And you could find things that might actually like save guys' lives almost in terms of the medical front. You've seen players that have come here and had things diagnosed, and it's been a big part of their future going forward. You guys last year, in the second round, drafted Kerryon Johnson, player that had tremendous college accolades. Saw him in 10 games last year, whatever the exact specific number was.
Yep.
What did you see from Kerryon? And I know there's the fan base clamors for, like, you want to see a guy carry the football 30 times in a game, which we know, like, they don't make too many, you know, Jim Browns in this world anymore. But what do you see from, like, is there the ability to do that? Or from a roster construction standpoint, are you guys always sort of thinking, like, hey, the ideal fit is a guy that's not necessarily carrying it 30 times a game by himself?
Yeah, I think nowadays with the season being so long and training camps being so long, there's probably 3 or 4, maybe 5 running backs in the entire league that you're comfortable, you know, calling that. You know, someone asked me a question in the press conference about being a bell cow.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really, you know, believe in that unless you have really a special guy that's really built to last, and there's only a handful of those guys really walking around in the NFL nowadays. So, you know, we love Kerryon. He did a great job as a rookie when he was healthy. He had a knee thing that he kind of worked through. And, you know, right now I know he's 100% kind of working out at Auburn as we speak. So, you know, we want to find someone that can complement that. You know, we got Theo Riddick kind of in our sub third down type package. But, you know, I think, you know, over a course of 16 games and hopefully the playoffs, you're going to need more than just one running back. So I think that's the way, you know, we always look at things. And I think the majority of the league, if you look across the rosters and the stats of each team, like, you know, there's two guys that are carrying the ball, and then it's usually a third down guy. So
Kerryon Johnson's your unofficial additional Southeast scout. He'll give you all the intel.
We've had some conversations. That's one thing that I try to do during the year. Probably once we get through, you know, middle of October, and I kind of get the lay of the land of, like, you know, our draft picks and some of our first and second year players and what guys are coming out from those schools, and I'll I'll pull them aside in the lunchroom and just pick their brain a little bit and kind of put those in my notes. And we always follow up with those guys, especially the guys that are kind of mature and they kind of know what our program is and like, can they handle the rigors of it, the mental and all that stuff. So it's good. Those guys have a really unique perspective. So we definitely use that.
Have you heard the nickname for Kenny of Babytron? Have you heard of this one before?
I've heard it. Yeah, I heard
obviously
it during the
derives
season.
Derives from Calvin and Megatron.
We're gonna slow down on that.
Just
for now.
That's our job on the outside. We get out of ourselves.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna pass on that one.
Okay, but you do certainly saw a lot of promise from Kenny this past year. Obviously, trading Golden Tate being traded can sort of change the complexion of how you guys are playing offensively. What did you see from Kenny in a second year? And I don't want to say that we get so caught up in just like a guy plays slot versus a guy plays on the outside.
Sure.
But can he be an every down wide receiver for you? Can he be a number one wide receiver in an offense based off what you've seen through two seasons now?
Yeah, you know, Kenny had came in as a rookie and had a good year, kind of battled through a hamstring there midseason, came back.
Yep.
And this year, we saw a lot of growth from Kenny from year one to year two, which is really what you want to see.
Yep.
And then, this year, like you said, with the trade came, once we got through midseason, we actually started moving Kenny into the slot a little bit more just to kind of match him up against different coverages, and that he had some production there too. Now, he's not your prototypical slot receiver, but in certain formations and against certain teams, he did a good job there. So he's a guy that we like, obviously, and he's multidimensional, that can play inside and outside, and we move him around, and we'll continue to do that.
But kind of guy who's, 6'3", whatever he actually is, where this is measurement week, so I should know he's like 6'0", 3'2",
yeah,
or something.
6'0", 3' something. Yeah.
Right. Can that be a full-time slot receiver? Like, I think about guys like Marcus Colston was certainly a bigger body that always played from the slot. There have been other guys. I mean, there's some tight ends that might as well be wide receivers or slot receivers now based off how they're used. Is that a full-time role for someone like Kenny? Not to tip the cap on the offense for next year, or tip the hand, I should say, but or is he too effective on the perimeter too that it's like you'd almost be putting it to waste if you only kept him in one spot?
Yeah, I think he has such a unique kind of skill set that, like we said, we can play inside and outside. I don't think we want to pigeonhole him into one place.
Yep.
I think he's a guy that we're going to move around based on the week, just like we do defensively. We kind of match our defensive backs up and our linebackers against certain skill guys, and I think we're going to do the same thing, offensively. You know, sometimes when we look at an opponent from an offensive perspective and their defense, okay, do their corners travel left and right? Okay, do they match up number one versus number two? Does their nickel just stay in the slot?
Yep.
So all those things kind of matter of what you're really going to do with a guy like Kenny, and kind of what kind of matchup you expect to see. And then really it's the coach's job once you get into the game, first quarter, second quarter, how are they defending this guy? Because I would say, after the first month of the season, Kenny saw a lot more attention in terms of double teams, guys over the top of him. So that's something we had to adjust to. And then, kind of organically with Golden not being there, moving him to the slot kind of freed him up from some of those double teams.
Feels like, I think 32 teams could all use more pass rush in the NFL. Probably no such thing as too many teams with too much pass rush. Does it feel like along those lines that this draft this is a useful one for everybody involved? It seems like the area of depth, and I'm using air quotes there right now because it's still 2 months away, is the front seven, specifically guys who can generate some pressure against quarterbacks. Is this such a good draft for everybody this year?
Yeah, it's a good draft overall. I think I said yesterday, I think there's 45 or 50 more juniors that came out compared to what came out last year just from underclassmen. So that immediately is going to increase the depth of the draft. And I think, pass rush is an area where there's different style of guys. There's pure 4-3 guys. There's some 3-4 outside linebacker types that can rush from a two-point stance. Yep. And there's a handful of guys that can rush inside and outside, which is, very attractive to teams like us that run multiple fronts. So it's a good draft for edge guys.
Yeah, it feels like it's a good draft for edge guys. And I don't want to belabor a point. I know you've been asked about plenty locally, but tight end is a spot that also feels like it's deeper this year. And not that every year you don't find a guy or two, but this year feels like there might be 4 or 5 guys that maybe in the first 40 or 50 picks could hear their names called. Is it something about do you think it's just unique to this class, or is it maybe people are realizing at the college level that tight end is such, it's almost like a movable chess piece at the pro level. The more you can find these guys early and identify them and develop them, it actually might help them in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's a position where, you look at college football, there's only, a handful of teams that run really true pro-style offenses. So all these guys, they're running spread offenses. They're 3-wide. They're 4-wide with a slot, with a tight end in the slot.
Yep.
So a lot of these guys are, are getting a lot of experience early on. And really, it's you come into college and maybe you're a linebacker, you're 6'2 and a half, 6'3, and all right, well, they're deep at linebacker, so hey, try it at tight end. And the guys are pretty athletic. So I think it's a, I think the college coaches are doing a really good job identifying guys that can kind of progress as their college season goes on, because really, it's really hard to play tight end as a really a freshman in college.
Yeah.
Because of the multitude, you got to block, you got to catch, you got to recognize routes. So I think, you know, it's, this is a good year for tight ends. I mean, again, you look at, you know, I remember last week I was, we were staring at the draft board, and a lot of the tight ends are juniors.
Right.
There's a ton of juniors in the tight end board. And, you know, a lot of them are more in the pass catching type of roles.
Say, Kirk Ferentz going to be a busy guy over the next couple months answering
his
questions.
His phone's going to be ringing. Yeah, for sure.
Last and probably the most important question is, other than Matthew Stafford, is there a player in the NFL that has a better arm than Matt Prater?
Oh, yeah, no, he zipped that one in there, didn't he?
Was that reminded me of, and Bob, obviously, before.
Vinatieri
to Troy. Was it Troy against St. Louis?
Same play.
I think that we were sitting in our big room and everybody's watching, and I'm like, I swear that was like 13 years ago. Matt Prater, who threw a dime.
He did. He was, you know, Matt was stressed out the whole week.
No,
there's a lot of pressure now. If you get that, you don't connect, and the guy's wide open. I mean,
it might be your only shot.
Your only shot ever at throwing the ball. And Matt Prater, he's a great guy. He's, you know, probably one of the most hardest guys on himself.
Right.
You know, if he gets there and hits a 45-yard field goal, and he just gets it in the right, off the right, upright and in, he's mad at himself, even though he connected on it.
Still counts three points.
Still connects. He's very much a perfectionist. And, you know, that whole week, you know, we had that in a couple weeks before. I think practiced it a handful of times, maybe two or three times over the last few weeks. And then the situation came up and, he nailed it.
Say, in fantasy football, that counted for some extra points. People were fired up on that one. Maybe not as fired up as Pat McAfee.
I don't really know the rules.
So
if you have him as your kicker,
yep,
you're scoring the points with the field goals and the extra points, and he throws a touchdown pass, it's how much?
It counts for four. So, at least standard scoring for us at ESPN, anything 40 to 49 yards is already a four-pointer. So it was like he kicked an extra field goal of 40 to 49 yards. That was big time right there.
Yeah.
He probably wants people some matchups that week.
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, we won it once, and the amount of attention that the play got, I don't think we're going to be running it anytime soon.
The problem is, like, it's using once, and you can't.
It's a once every five-year thing.
I say the Rams the only team that like consistently run fake punts, it seems like, and fairly effectively too. Like they're always dropped. Like I think I want to say John Hecker's thrown 20 passes in his career.
Really,
20?
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's not bad.
Like, well, I know their special teams coach Coach Fassel is a pretty aggressive guy, and he's pretty unique with the way he schemes it up. So they do a good job.
I think Prater's going out on top. Perfect passer rating, one touchdown.
Yeah, let's hope he's perfect next year from the field goals and the extra points, and we'll be all happy.
It's a good goal to strive for.
Yep.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, appreciate it,
man.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Yep. He's Matthew Berry. He's
Matthew Berry. All right, we are here at the NFL Combine with my head coach, Jay Gruden of my Washington Redskins. Hail the Redskins. Hail victory. So, Coach Gruden, last 2 years, Washington Redskins have led the NFL in players on injured reserve, still managed to win 7 games each of the year. You're starting fourth-string quarterbacks. You're starting guys off the street in the offensive line. I actually think the last 2 years have actually been a very impressive coaching performance given what you've had to work with and the changing roster constantly throughout. Want to talk about sort of going into 2019, and let's start with the quarterback position. I mean, so Alex is banged up, and I know there's certain things you can't talk about, but is the starting quarterback of the Washington Redskins in 2019 currently on the roster?
Yes, I anticipate he is. You know, whether Alex comes back or not, I feel great about Colt. Everybody understands or has, it's been put out there that I have strong feelings towards Colt and his ability.
Yeah.
He can move in the pocket. He's a great leader. He can make all the throws. The key thing for Colt is he's been hurt every time he's had an opportunity. We got to figure out a way to keep him healthy. So we do have to address the position via draft or free agency to bring somebody else in here. One, maybe two, maybe three quarterbacks in.
So if, let's go with that. So hopefully Alex is, but whether it's Alex or Colt under center, when opening day happens, feels like, you know, prior to this past year, feels like your offenses were more pass first, right? In terms of when I look at some of the stuff you did with Dalton in Cincinnati, when I think about, you know, RG3 and Kirk and some of those offenses, they were pass first. But felt like with Alex, and then Colt and Josh sort of continued that it was more of a, and maybe this is a result of, you know, better defensive play, but felt like we want to emphasize the run game here, limit turnovers, and just curious offensively how you see
your system working in 2019?
Yeah, I think when we first got Alex, you know, we wanted to try to – Alex is a great quarterback. He's very efficient with the football, very smart, takes care of the football for sure. So the ability to move the ball, even if we had to punt, we were doing a lot of RPOs where we're reading linebackers, yep. And those RPOs have kind of taken the place of the quick passing game on first down. You know, you're either handing off or you're maybe reading a backer or reading a defensive end or what have you. So our running numbers went up. But we were efficient with the ball. We were controlling the clock. We felt like our offensive line was a area of strength when we started the season. Obviously that changed as the season went on.
Yeah.
But moving forward, I think, being able to mix it up with both those guys is important. But I think managing the game, controlling the clock, some of our best drives, we didn't score a point. You know, we held the ball for 7 or 8 minutes, punted, backed the other team up and
backed them up, and it's all ball control. Right.
Exactly right.
So three and out, and then you get the ball back at their 40 or something like that. Right.
Exactly right. And that was when we were playing good and we're winning games 20-17 or whatever. That's a recipe for success. So, but when everybody got hurt, it kind of changed a little bit and we had our issues. But, moving forward, I think, running the football is going to be a critical.
So let's talk more about running the football then. Adrian Peterson had it, despite the fact that the offensive line, you know, had a lot of changes, a lot of injuries, poor Trent Williams out there playing on one leg, basically. You were still able to get, and with, you know, limitations in the passing game, obviously, because of Alex's injury and the rotations there, you were still able to get Adrian going. Eighth in the NFL in rushing yards last year. I know he's a free agent, and you're figuring that out, but talk to me a little bit about your run game here. I guess we'll start with this. If Adrian moves on, where is Darius Geis in terms of his recovery? Have you talked to Darius? How's he feeling?
Yeah, I talked to Darius a lot, and he's doing great. He's young, he's strong, he's got a lot of energy. That's for sure. He's a ball. He's a yeah. little firecracker, but he's going to be fine. He's strong. He's posted some things on Instagram.
Yep.
I'm sure you follow him.
I do.
Okay,
I do.
So,
I know,
but,
yeah.
but Darius is going to be fine. And Chris Thompson, we have Byron Marshall in the house. Samaje Perine, you know, everybody says in my doghouse, he's going to have another opportunity to make some plays. We have not lost sight of Samaje on our football team. He's a good running back and can provide us depth, so we're in good shape.
Is the expectation, is assuming full health, though, that Darius would, again, this is an assumption that Adrian doesn't come back, and I know there's conversations, mm-hmm. maybe he will, but if Adrian doesn't come back, is the assumption that, assuming full health, Darius is going to be the guy, the workhorse, because it feels like...
Yeah, Belka, the good thing about Darius is he doesn't have to come out on third down. Now, what surprises right. the most about him in the off-season and training camp was his ability to catch the ball. We didn't know that at LSU. He didn't really have a lot of opportunities to catch it. So watching him catch the ball, run option routes, he's good at that, too.
He's a really good pass catcher. That's another thing, because I'm a Redskins nerd. I watch all the practice stuff and all the, you know, all the beat reporters. And, yeah, I mean, he was catching balls. You guys were doing a bunch of stuff with him in the pass game prior to the injury. And so I think that's what's exciting, too, is because I feel like sometimes you bring in Chris and people are like, oh, it's got to be a pass. But with Darius, it gives you some more options.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And then, you know, Chris is a key third down element for us. Maybe get back on track guy, change of pace guy. But having that bell cow in there, that first down that opens up the play action passes, now you can use him in the RPOs and the play action passes. We're getting him out of the backfield. There's a lot of options there.
So one last question on the run game here, just because we're playing the what-ifs. Adrian, who was so great and from what I understand, beloved in the locker room as well, like a great teammate in addition to, you know, obviously played mm-hmm. very well last year. If Adrian comes back, do you envision a scenario where, hey, Darius, one more year, we're going to do a bell cow, or just kind of a split because you got two big guys there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we just have to wait and see how it plays out. Somebody mentioned earlier about special teams. You know, you like to have one of your backs be a special team player, whether it's on punt, being a, you know, a wing or something
sure.
on special teams. And all those guys really have done that. So there are a lot of issues, though. First things first, we have to get Adrian signed if
right.
that happens, and then we'll deal with all the other stuff. But having Adrian back would be outstanding. He was great for the locker room. He's a great leader. Obviously, the respect factor that he demands from people with his production and his history of being a professional football player is unexplainable. He's great to have.
So yeah, it'd be a nice problem. It wouldn't be one you'd complain about trying to figure out how to split the rock between Peterson
and
Geis.
Our history of the unfortunate injuries, the more players we have, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. Depth definitely helps, especially in the NFL. It's been a tough go, but hey, all right, let's talk about the passing game for a second. I want to talk specifically about Jordan Reed real quickly. Feels like he got a lot of volume, but I don't know if he was playing through an injury last year or whatever, but I felt like he didn't seem as explosive as I've seen him in previous years.
Yeah, that's great because when he, in training camp, we were really limited him. He's coming off the, both feet he had some issues with. So we were kind of limiting him. We were trying to take care of him. And early in the season, we weren't playing him quite as much as we probably would have liked just because we're trying to just get him back in the flow. Trying to get to know Alex and Alex trying to get to know him with some of the option routes that we like to run. You know, it takes a little bit of time. And once we finally started getting back into it, then obviously Alex got hurt and then Jordan got hurt. So, but Jordan is still a very explosive player and he is a major, major part of the success of our football team with what he can do. Not only blocking, he's getting better, but what he can do to linebackers in the option game at tight end is key.
So still see him as a big part of the offense.
Yeah, for sure. And then you move him outside, you know, you get coverage tells when he's outside. He can, I mean, he's as good a slot receiver as we have. People say, hey, if you lose Jameson, you're in trouble. We got Jordan. Jordan's as good a slot receiver.
People don't realize, Jordan's basically, he's a wide receiver who's called tight end, but like he's unbelievable. Paul Richardson, have you had a chance to talk to him? How's he coming along?
Yeah, Paul was obviously frustrated, man. He's a very explosive player and, you know, his knee was a little sore and obviously he had the shoulder or the collarbone or whatever. It was a big issue. He's running kind of like this and he just wasn't Paul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Richardson needs to be a 4.25, 40 guy.
Right.
That's what he is. But he
and it
was
feels
never
like with your offense, you need that guy. Like,
everybody, you need to have a guy that can take the top off that strikes fear in your defense so you can't just play, you know, the tight coverages all day long. You're the backup eventually, which opens it up for the running game and Jordan Reed and everybody else. So it'll be exciting to see him at full strength. I really never felt like I saw him at full strength, maybe in training camp a little bit, but he got dinged up and never felt the same. So hopefully with this amount of time to rehab his knee and his shoulder, he'll be good to go.
Last question for you, just about two other receivers. First off, what does Josh Dotson need to do to sort of fulfill his potential that we've all seen? And then the second piece of that is, talk to me a little bit about my little Trey Quinn, who I love.
Oh, Trey's the best, yeah. Well, Josh, you know, the issue with Josh is opportunities, really. And I think there's some opportunities that, you know, when I go back and watch our film that he had that he didn't make, which are frustrating. And there's some, he did make some good plays also. But we also have to understand that when you have Jordan Reed and Chris Thompson, sometimes a receiver position on the outside becomes your third or fourth option. You know, we're more of an inside-out passing attack. Having Alex Smith and Kirk here before that, they love to work the middle of the field and work those option routes and not so much throw the deep comebacks or the deep daggers across the middle or the deep post ball. You know what I mean?
Right.
So his opportunities have not come like other outside receivers have around the league. So hopefully they'll continue to come for him and he'll produce like we all think he can.
Although it does seem like Colt's not scared to take those shots.
No,
maybe
Colt's
a little bit more.
Not.
So
Colt will watch it now. Yeah. So I think that's,
so. Maybe there's some opportunities for Josh with Colt under center.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And when we had Josh Dotson gave some opportunities,
right,
and you know, so it's all about opportunities.
Yeah.
You can't do anything if you don't get the opportunity. But he does need to do a little bit better job of creating separation from time to time, and he can work on his route crispness, so to speak, and. But he's still a young player. He's young, strong, and fast, so we'll get him the ball.
Terrific. Trey Quinn. Do we think a role for Trey Quinn? I thought that was one of the steals of the draft last year for you guys.
Yeah, it was a great pick, man. I take credit for that one. Yeah, that's my guy. they had the other receiver there that went in the first round, second round. Tech was his name, at SMU. I forgot his name. Yeah.
Cortland Sutton, right?
And so I'm watching Cortland Sutton, and I keep saying, who's this other guy? He's catching all the balls. And it was Trey Quinn. And we ended up getting him, but unfortunately he got hurt. But he's a great blanket for us. If something happens, we lose Jameson.
Yeah.
You know, I think
he's a free agent, right?
Yeah. I think he can step right in there and be your slot receiver. He can play outside also. He's a physical kid. He'll go in there and block safeties if we need to in a running game. But he was absolutely, he's a great punt returner. He only returned a couple at SMU, but, he's proven he can catch it and be productive in that role for us as well.
Well, terrific. Well, listen, Coach, we just need to stay healthy. That's what I feel like. But, you know me. I'm a diehard Redskins fan. Everyone knows that as well. So,
well, thanks.
Hail to the Redskins. Hail victory.
Let's do it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you. He's Matthew Berry. He's Matthew Berry.
All right, so I'm here with Raiders offense coordinator Greg Olsen. Of course, you guys know he was the offense coordinator with the Jacksonville Jaguars back when Blake Bortles was actually useful for fantasy. Somehow managed to get over 30 touchdowns out of Blake. Then you went to Los Angeles. You were part of Sean McVay's staff, and at first year there helped resurrect Jared Goff. And then Coach Gruden said, come to Oakland, help me with what we're doing in Oakland. And you've been the offense coordinator of the Raiders this past year.
Yeah, I'm excited. Obviously, coming back to the Raiders, I started out with Derek Carr. So
okay.
I was with Oakland as a coordinator when we drafted Derek. So excited to get back with Derek, and obviously excited to get back with John Gruden as well.
So let's talk just in terms of the offense. You know, it's interesting. Coach Gruden, at his press conference, a lot of questions about Derek, and he was emphatic. Derek Carr is our franchise quarterback. He's our guy. You know, didn't stop people from asking, what do you need to see from Derek this year to take that next step?
It's a continued improvement from within the system. I think he's gone through different coordinators since coming into the league. And now he's going to have some stability. He's going to have an offensive head coach for the first time that is completely involved in all facets of his development. So I think we expect to see growth in the second year. You would expect to see that in any system, but I think in John Gruden's system and the chance to meet with John on a daily basis and be with him, we just have very high expectations and high standards, and he holds himself to those standards. So excited to see the improvement.
Well, I know, and I think I can say this. So I saw you last night, and we were talking about doing this interview, and I'm like, hey, you know, could we do it at 10? Is that going to be too early? And you're like, I'm meeting with Coach Gruden at 8. What are you talking about? Yeah, sure, I can do that. And we have to wrap this interview up because Coach Gruden said, hey, get back here. We got to crunch some more tape. We got to go over some more stuff. So I know you guys are absolutely pounding the pavement. I think one of the things that will help Derek Carr, obviously, is having the same receivers out there. And so talk to me a little bit about your pass catchers, because you go into a year thinking, okay, we've got Amari Cooper. You didn't know what you had in Jordy Nelson last year. Amari leaves midseason. There's some injuries. So just talk to me a little bit about how you see the pass catchers coming into this season.
Well, I think we've got to make some upgrades in that area. And we're happy with the players that we have. We're happy with Jordy Nelson, Seth Roberts, Marcel Aitman came in as a seventh round pick and played. And very few seventh round pick wide receivers are actually play as in that rookie year. So we have some pieces in place, but certainly we'd like to upgrade not only at the wide receiver position, but the running back position is going to be fluid as well. You know, depending on what happens with Marshawn Lynch. Doug Martin was a 1 year free agent.
Right.
Jalen Richard has been a receiving running back, and we were happy with his production. We think he's going to be a very productive player here in his second year in the system. But overall, we'd like to add some pieces for him.
So do you think – so is there a chance – I think the expectation is that Marshawn Lynch is done playing. But, of course, with Marshawn, you never know. Is there a chance that Marshawn Lynch is back in the silver and black?
I think there certainly is. He still has something left in the tank. You know, it was an unfortunate injury that he had last year that otherwise he was playing as probably as well as he had played in the last 5 years. So, we still think that there's a year or two left in his legs. And he's excited about being part of the program and part of the resurrection in Oakland. And, if we feel like he can still play and he wants to play, then we'll certainly welcome him back.
All right, so that's still that would certainly be interesting. So it doesn't sound like, you know, and obviously there's a lot of people and a lot of things go into various decisions, but it sounds like not sure if Doug Martin comes back or not. You mentioned Richard, you got Richardson there as well, but sounds like whether it's through free agency or the draft, sounds like you'll be adding to that position. That's the thought.
Yeah. We think both those positions will take a good hard look at the running back and wide receiver position. You know, tight ends, we were happy with Jared Cook. Obviously had a tremendous year for us, a career year for him.
Yeah, what you guys did with Jared Cook was nothing short of amazing.
Yeah, his best year, and so we see, you know, bigger things for him as well.
No, but he's a free agent this year, too. But the hope is that he's coming back.
Correct.
Right.
We liked Darren Waller's, the guy that we added late from Baltimore. We signed him off of Baltimore's practice squad. I think he's got a very high ceiling. Lee Smith's been our blocking tight end. So we have some pieces there. That's a strong room, the tight end room. But, might probably be priority. We'll see
I want to dial in on Jared Cook there for 1 second, Greg. So my question is I'm curious, because Jared had a monster year. And, I mean, like, kudos to you and the staff for getting the most out of Jared Cook. I always felt like he's somebody that I have, you know, candidly, I have been negative towards previously to Oakland because, you know,
he looks great, right? He's one of those guys that that looks like a football player. He walks off the field, you're like, how is this guy not dominating? And then whether it was with Aaron Rodgers or didn't really fit, you know, with the Rams earlier in his career, just never seemed to click for him for whatever reason. And then he comes to Oakland, obviously has a great year, has a connection with Derek Carr. I'm curious how much of that was based on we've got something special in Jared. How much of that was like the tight end position is something in your system and John's system that you feel like you guys can exploit and use? So I'm just curious how much of it was Jared specific or just that role. If Jared were to move on, you guys would find hopefully another tight end to take that role.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think certainly with the trade of Amari Cooper,
right.
You know, you looked at the skill position players. He just had a unique set of skills to that position. And for matchup purposes, we just found it. You know, he was our best matchup,
right?
As the season wore on. So, again, because he's been in different systems, he's been all over the place. We're still hoping that if we can get him back and get him a second year in John's system, that he could even have just as productive a season in 2019. But, really more so that losing Amari Cooper really led to his increase emergence in production.
Sure, yeah. Well, certainly more targets to go around, yeah. And certainly there's a connection there with Derek.
Yeah.
Back to Jordy for one second. Where do you guys internally feel like he was most productive, outside or in the slot? Because you guys sort of moved him around.
Yeah. And again, that was predicated because of the movement of Amari.
Right.
But we think he can play inside now. And I think, as later in his career, he's done a nice job in the slot. He started out his most productive years in Green Bay. We're on the outside, we feel. But, we would use him in both areas again.
Fair to say the number one wide receiver for the Oakland Raiders is not currently on the roster. In 2019, the number one wide receiver, not pass catcher, because you're hoping Jared comes back, but the number one wide receiver for the Oakland Raiders is not currently on the roster.
Well, in fairness to the guys we have, we're excited about them.
Right.
And we're excited about that crew in that room. And if we happen to find somebody to add to that that room, to help in the production in that area, then we'll go out and research that. But right now we're happy with the guys that we got, but we're looking to add.
Last question for you, Greg. Give me one sleeper. Give me, we know the big names, but give me one sleeper. Give me one guy that Raiders fans and fantasy players should be watching out for in the preseason and OTAs and training camps and just seeing the progress of this guy. You know, maybe an under-the-radar guy that you like a lot and you're looking forward to seeing what he does this year.
I would say Darren Wallers, the tight end we picked up from Baltimore. We're excited about his skill set. And he came in, we got him off that squad, and he came and played right away and had a couple big explosive pass catches, and so we think he's got a real high ceiling, and we're excited about that player.
Well, you guys have a ton of draft picks. You've got a Super Bowl winning coach. We know what your production is. It speaks for itself. Every stop you've ever been, your offenses have always produced. So wish you success. We're going to be looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun this year.
Thanks for the time, Matt, and good to see you.
He's Matthew Berry. All right, live from the NFL Combine, I'm here with Les Snead, Rams general manager of the NFC champion Rams. How are you, man? Congratulations on a great season. I know it didn't end the way you wanted, but an impressive year nonetheless.
I've heard that a lot. What's
right.
Great about that is you said great season. So there's been time to reflect. The silver medal will be an accomplishment in time. But
sure.
You said great season, and that means, okay, that was 18. Now it's time to move to 19.
Right.
And so, in 19, we need a better backdrop than this.
100%.
This is bad television.
We got to work on the budget. But I have to say, bad television works well. That's sort of what we do. It's kind of it's on brand for us over at the Fantasy Show. Hey, so you sort of made news earlier today at your press conference. So I want to sort of talk about this because Coach McVay, I think, I don't want to say he disagreed with you, but it seemed slightly different. So clarification on Todd Gurley, obviously. That's a big question for fantasy
right.
players, that kind of stuff. I think the phrase you sort of used was a Robin to his Batman, if you will, try to limit his workload. I think Sean had sort of indicated that he felt like that, that Todd's earned his right to be the lead dog, obviously, and his production speaks for itself. So I'm curious if you could clarify a little bit of how you see the running back role going into 2019 for the Rams.
I think what we have to determine is it best for Todd, and we haven't determined that yet, in terms of keeping him fresh. He's
sure.
had a lot of carries. So we have to determine that internally, is it best? Now, there's probably three prongs of that. How do we handle the off season? Some people think, do you really work hard and things like that, stay in shape, but there is an element of, of wear and tear on your joints when you do that. Then it gets to how do you manage them in the season, and then is it getting to a point where, you know, we get to a point similar to what we did this year and lessen the load for Todd so he can be fresher at the end of the year and for seasons come. That's still to be determined, and we're going to try to figure it out, but that's the calculus equation.
Okay, so – and I understand we're talking in February, and you still have to figure out whether you get CJ back, what happens in the draft, and you know you're still figuring out what your running back room is going to look like in 2019. But if you had to put a number on it, 70-30, 75-25 in terms of Todd, I know you're going to talk about a calculation here, but assuming he comes through and he passes all the physicals and he's healthy, right?
Right. And that's where he's at.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really like I always try to explain, it's like a marathon runner. I mean, he's run a lot of marathons. He's had a lot of touches, had a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns. So it just, hey, all of a sudden, I think it's cumulative from the time he got in the league. I'm a little sore this week than I was last.
Right.
But in terms of, let's call it, you know, anything other than that, that's really what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the for people that play fantasy, they look at sort of the split down the stretch. Like, he was in a full-on timeshare with C.J. Anderson, and obviously worked out for you guys. You guys got all the way to the Super Bowl in a couple of plays. That game turns out differently. But is the feeling like, hey, that worked for us, or is the thought basically that we want to ease his workload, but he's still Todd Gurley. He's still a franchise back. He's still a guy that we
– No doubt, because I think running backs too, you think about it, if they have – the more carries they have, the better chance they're going to get a hole and break it.
Right.
So – and they always go to the Super Bowl, right? And I think Todd Gurley's longest run got called back because of the holding penalty. If there's no holding there and – he gets that 15-yard game. Take
a
that.
Questionable holding call, I'd like to say, by the way.
But that's life in the NFL. You got to get over it. We didn't overcome it, and it cost us. But let's take that 15 yards out. It's not like, oh Todd Gurley's back, but maybe he, on the next carry, he gets a hole and goes the distance and a touchdown, and next thing you know, it's an MVP Super Bowl, and the Todd Gurley questions are over. But so there's that element of, like, how do you feed the ball to a running back, how do you not? And I think we've got to sit down internally and try to figure that out, and we got to figure it out with Todd as well.
Last question on the running backs, and then we'll move on. How is Malcolm Brown's health? Because I think people have sort of forgotten him because CJ sort of came on, and how will that impact the decision on whether or not CJ's a member of the Rams next year?
I can tell you it is an interesting calculus formula for us. Take Todd out of it. We really like Malcolm Brown. I mean, Malcolm Brown had a really – that's when I got excited for our mic people here. Malcolm Brown had a really nice role for us, was very productive. Didn't run the ball as much as CJ, but that was until – you know, then Malcolm gets hurt. Todd misses a game, so we basically have to put the game in CJ's hands, and he actually produced well for us. So his production leads you to go, wow, that's – you'd like to have that type of player back. And we're definitely going to work toward that. Now it gets to, okay, wait a minute. We got Malcolm Brown, and now you get a little bit crowded. But what's Malcolm Brown's role going to be? What he has been is a four-core team player for us. So there's that element of, okay, hey, if he's active on game day, there's definitely a role for him. So that's a little bit of a calculus equation that I think you got to figure out, because you want to tell each one of those players on the front end, this is the role, so that they don't find out on the back end.
Is the expectation he'll be ready for opening day from what you know?
Malcolm?
Malcolm,
oh, yeah. He'll be ready for opening day, so.
Let's transition to another injured player, my little Cooper Kupp. That's always how I refer to him on television, my little Cooper Kupp. Loved him as a rookie coming into the league. And so where is Cooper in his recovery?
He's progressing well. So if you know Cooper, he's going to work extremely hard. You know, if there's a hard work, if there's a 10 out there, he's a 12, he's a 13. So you almost want to say, hey, Cooper, you need to take a break. You need to go on vacation, but that would be fruitless. He's not listening to you. He would go somewhere else and work hard. So he's progressing. I think what we will do though, through OTAs, through training camp, is definitely managing easy men. We know Cooper Kupp can play. Goal is to make sure that He's fully recuperated and really take a lot of the risk out of doing anything else to it through those, let's call it, times of the year where they're not keeping score.
Right. So the expectation, though, is that,
yes,
again, you'll have Cooper Kupp week one.
No doubt.
Terrific. In terms of your wide receiver core, I'm curious if when Cooper went down, you brought in Josh Reynolds, second-year player, moved him outside. Woods came inside where Kupp had played most of the time. Do you feel like that your depth in that position is good, that you feel like you feel good, obviously, with those three guys, and then if anything were to happen, you've got Reynolds as a four, or do you feel like you need to fortify that?
No, we really like our four, for sure. But I don't want to discount that when you do lose a Cooper Kupp, it is going to affect you. You can't lose that caliber of a player, and it doesn't. Now, no team in the NFL is going to give you sympathy, so you got to figure out how best to overcome that loss as best you can. And the versatility of Robert Woods really helps, and really all of our receivers have nice versatility as well. So, you know, Sean's trying to put them in places where they make plays. But and then you Sean would then run a little more 12 personnel, double tight ends, yep, instead of the 11. So there's ways to overcome it. But losing Cooper Kupp is a tough loss, and it's not something you get over easily.
Last question for me. You mentioned the tight end. So let's talk about Higbee and Everett. It feels like it was hard to sort of get a sense from watching from the outside in terms of how you guys felt like, you know, Higbee played more snaps, but then in crucial moments, Everett was there and made some big plays. Right. You know, I think about the Monday night game against Kansas City, like, you know, Everett was huge down the stretch there. So I'm just curious how you sort of, see that position and talk about those two guys in relation to each other in terms of playing time coming this upcoming year.
I think Sean will tell them that they both have different genres, and Gerald can be an element of a matchup issue, and Sean used him different than Higbee because of those reasons. So, and I do think going forward in the future, he would like to utilize a little more 12 than he has in the past. The problem gets is when Cooper Kupp's been on the field, and we're in 11 personnel, we've been very successful. And one of the unsung reasons we've been successful in that package is all three of those guys, Cooks, Kupp, and Woods, are really, really tenacious blockers. Yeah. So we've proven to be able to run the ball out of 11. It's been a... Yeah, I'm sure your analytics would say, oh, we're in 11 a lot.
Yes, they do.
But that's a little bit of the reason, because we can run the ball out of it and pass the ball out.
Right, and it's hard for defensive coordinators to know what you guys are doing.
Right.
So there you go. Well, listen, Les, you know I'm a fan. I appreciate the time very much, and I'm looking forward to 2019.
Okay, appreciate it.
You're in the 06-010. Never going to hustle in case you didn't know. Matthew Berry, TMR.
You guys go ahead, give me grief for being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
I think you could do better than me, because I don't think you could.
Jail bait, Phil Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At Field Yates. At Field Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Barry convert you.
Secret Squirrel Daniel Dunn.
Make happen.
Meet